Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Julieta Tlevi, and joining me to discuss your questions this evening will be Zwelakhe Mguni from Benguela Global Fund Managers when we get him on the line, and Rowan Williams, Nitrogen Fund Managers, portfolio manager there. If you'd like to send questions, please SMS 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Rowan, good to see you there this evening, firstly. And it's the start of a new month, not a great one. The overall index ending down 0.4%. But there were some very interesting moves today, and let's maybe talk about them. A share like Quilter that no one really ever follows, up 15% at the close. What's going on there?
Yeah, so it does seem like the market is hungry for news. That seemed to emanate from what was a report in the Daily Mail. It must have been over the weekend, indicating that Quilter was in play, and NatWest, a large UK bank, was interested in possibly acquiring Quilter. It does seem that when there were further reports that NatWest is actually considering a range of wealth managers as options, and Quilter is on that list, but it still seemed to capture the market's imagination, and we saw the share move up around 15% on the day. And that's when the rand had strengthened a bit, and actually the rest of the market was quite soft. So it certainly stood out. And I guess given Mediclinic and what we've seen, I think people are, you know, getting excited potentially about further transactions that could take place.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, the overall market, as you say, wasn't great. Was the rand a factor there, or was it, I don't know, what was it really? Or just a bit of maybe breathtaking?
Yeah, I think we saw quite a significant rebound in July. I mean, we actually saw the markets rally late in the month off a 75 basis point Fed hike rate, which seemed maybe a little bit excessive. The S&P was up over 9% for July. So I think it is a bit of pause and reflect, and to see where next. I mean, we are seeing a little bit of geopolitical tension start to bubble up as well. It appears just in terms of U.S.-China relations and Nancy Pelosi's visit to the region, the Asian region. She's in Singapore. I believe she may go to Taiwan tomorrow. So that late in the session, the JSE started to sell off, I think. So that, given a balance of probabilities, markets run hard, maybe some risk appetite sort of diminishing, market selling off a bit.
Nice to see you joining us there. We were talking about Quilter at the start of the show, and I know Quilter is hardly symptomatic of a broader market. It's a very particular stock that actually not many people tend to chat about, and we're talking about the 15% rise on speculation that NatWest is interested in it. I suppose the interesting thing is that year to date, I think its shares are still down 30%. So if you got excited today, you actually maybe should temper your excitement. But do you think it is likely that we will see more such offers for companies that haven't had much of a rebound, or have, for whatever reason, got knocked back, but are actually good businesses? Do you think there's quite a few contenders like that on the JSE? Oh, have we lost Zwelakhe just as we got him? Oh dear. The technological gods are not in our favor this evening. So Rowan, perhaps if you can answer that question, and then I'll go back to Zwelakhe. What do you think?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, it's an interesting point. What we are seeing is generally interest rates are still fairly low. Certain companies have had significant profitability, and what we're seeing is they may have been sitting on the sidelines waiting for some shares, as you're indicating, to underperform and drop down in value. And maybe if they felt they'd missed a key market rally, they now see an opportunity at quite significantly reduced prices. And if so, you were an interested buyer, this does look much more opportune in terms of potentially putting in a bid. Mm. A lot of the companies, South African companies on the JSE, actually have very reasonable valuations. What we saw is some of the companies didn't actually rebound significantly off the lows from the pandemic-induced sell-off. And so now we're seeing a secondary sell-off just given the market selling off again as rates go up. And so these shares have got very cheap. I mean, we're seeing quite a few mid-cap counters on single-digit PEs and have a dividend yield close to the PE, which is typically a key indicator of value.
Yeah.
And so there are, I think, fairly ripe opportunities, and we could see, yeah, bigger players taking a tilt at some of these companies that sort of just haven't got the rating, I guess, they deserve or attractive for buyers at these levels.
Yeah. So we're like, sorry to, but I hope that we've got a secure connection with you now. And
Well, we
so,
do.
yeah, okay, good. You heard my question, obviously. And are there any contenders that spring to mind? As Rowan says, there's a lot of small to mid-cap companies that are still trading at very, very reasonable levels. I mean, are there any obvious plays out there for you?
Yeah, I mean, I probably think that if you look across the market, there is a lot of attractive stocks. I think more, I'll be a bit cautious about the resources sector, but that's probably where deals could actually happen as well, the consolidation. And I think if you look at our insurance, banking sectors, I mean, they're quite attractive. And I wouldn't be surprised if at some point we see somebody coming into that area of the market trying to buy an asset in that space. But I would probably say you may see the buyers waiting a bit for a proper pullback in the market, because we don't know whether we are in a recession yet in the US or not. And I think once the bad news come through, I think it might be an opportune time as the market panics that the prices pull back and people might actually want to take advantage of that. And I'm referencing this to the post 2001 crash, where the tech companies were bought en masse after the correction, so not prior to the correction.
Okay, in other words, maybe what we're seeing are just sort of bear market rallies within that we're still in a stronger pullback, and we mustn't discount that possibility, which is a bit terrifying. Okay, just sticking with you, Zwelakhe, there was a question on Thungela Resources, which I don't know if you can describe as a value stock anymore, although, unless, I mean, if it carries on making the kind of money it is at the moment, maybe an argument could be made there. But the question was, Thungela hit a new record of 305 rand a share, although it did come off that at the close. I think it was sort of down 0.25%. Good results, a good trading update announced today. It opened 12 months ago at 25 rand a share. So this was the trade of, I don't know, the century maybe. Can it go higher? As well, like, do you think the action today would indicate that maybe no, it can't?
Look, it's difficult to say whether it can go higher, and I'll separate the two components of that price. One, if you look at the PE, it's extremely low. If you look at the earnings, they're extremely high. And the question is, what could happen? You need to normalize the things. And I'll probably say at best, if we assume maybe the coal price stays where it is for another year, you'd probably say it's fairly valued. But if you normalize the coal price to more longer-term levels, I doubt that they can sustain this kind of price. So I'd be very cautious about it. I think the PE is reflecting that. That's why the PE is very low. But I do think that you might see an overshoot or on the downside in the earnings, and the PE would actually ratchet up as a result.
Yeah. Rowan, I think one of the most ambitious targets out there a few months ago, I might be going back, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, was 290 rand a share. Well, we are at that now. So a kudos to whichever investment bank called that one. Would you cash in on Thungela now if you still had them?
Yeah, I mean, as we were saying, it's really a play on the coal price, and we are at a peak point in the cycle. So we were seeing significant tightness in coal markets, and the coal price rallying dramatically. We're already starting to see oil prices come off. And the point is that coal is part of the energy complex, and even though there's demand for it, given the potential supply disruptions out of Russia to Europe. Certainly, the high prices are going to generate further supply, and maybe some mothballed supply would come online. So the enemy of high prices is high prices. So I think the coal price is certainly going to come off from here, and that means the earnings will drop. So I guess it's the estimate but it does look pretty full, I'd say, just because of the, not on the PE type earnings, but the cyclicality of the coal price. And you see it in Kumba as well. I mean, that's down significantly as iron ore futures have come down.
Well, to ever whoever held on for the whole run and who bought in, congratulations to you. You got your 10 bagger. Those don't come along every day. And there's a question on an entirely different company, Impact. The question is Impact a buy or a debt trap? If you strip out the insurance payouts from Impact's trading statement, and I think that was related to it was the clo there was the substation power issues in the Springs operations. So if you strip that out, their EBIT is almost flat. The company is warning of input cost raises for inputs across the business at rates outpacing inflation. And within the context of high interest rates, the company has taken on additional debt of over 400 million rand for CapEx and working capital outflow. So the total debt is now over 2.2 billion rand. Would the panel buy Impact at these levels? So we're lucky. If you look at it, does that look like an inordinately large amount of debt that they've taken on, and does that worry you?
I do. I think I'm a bit worried when a cyclical company does take a bit of debt to that extent. I mean, if you look at the kind of products that they sell, they consumer facing some a lot of the products go to the consumer market, and I think the current environment economically is not really great for the consumer. We're getting high rising interest rates. We also have the income shrinking for consumers. So I do think that there could be a bit of pressure, and that would actually amplify the debt levels. So I wouldn't buy it at these levels.
Rowan, what do you think? The other element about Impact is you've got Caxton, which is kind of sneaking up on them. It's, Caxton is not known for a big bang kind of announcement. I don't think anyone has seen Terry Moorman for about 15 years, but they are interested in buying Impact. So is that the one thing maybe supporting the price? I don't know. How does one judge whether or not you look at something like Impact?
Yeah, so I mean, I think it is supporting the price because there's some potential underpin, and they have got close to Caxton got close to 35%. Remember that above 35% is the threshold for a mandatory offer to minorities. So at the highest price that the shares were accumulated at. So that does create an underpin, and it is in play. If I understand, Caxton also did apply for a sort of pre-approval from competition authorities to raise their stake. So they have that in place as well. So it does look like the near term, there are some headwinds for the business, and that is a point when they are sort of going into a CapEx cycle again. I know investors have been disappointed by the cash flows there. It does look like a neat business, but there have been setbacks. So it's a quite a mixed investment case. And I guess going into a weak consumer environment, issues with fruit exports, I think I'd like to see the results, understand the potential first before we sort of would buy. But these are an example of companies that are quite cheap, mid-cap companies that we were talking about earlier. And Impact certainly does fit that bill as well.
Just maybe lastly, not to belabor this point, but if there were an offer from Caxton, would you make any money on Impact if you were buying the shares now?
Yeah, so you need to analyze exactly what price, if it were to be a mandatory offer, they sort of the maximum price they paid. And I think at this level, they did accumulate some shares higher up, but I'm not certain of that. So you need to do your homework and understand the time period of which they accumulated. I know they bought a lot of shares much lower down. So you're right, possibly there isn't any upside because they didn't pay above the current share price. Then there isn't any upside to that.
So we're lucky. Any last word? I mean, do you have any clearer figure in your mind as to what that
No,
mandatory offer could be?
I'm not sure. I'd have to actually look at the numbers, but I certainly agree with my colleague that the price would probably be a lot lower than where we are.
In reference to Thungela. And there is probably an even lower P company, and that is ArcelorMittal South Africa. So the question is, what are your views on ArcelorMittal South Africa? They seem very cheap, PE of around 1.5 times earnings, trading below their net asset value, making profits, little debt to speak of, no dividend, but I'm sure it will come soon. Well, Zwelakhe, I don't know. I'm not sure I share this view of certainty, but I stand absolutely to be corrected. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I look at what gave the earnings a boost. And essentially, the price of steel multiplied by the rand that has actually supported it. But there's also they've had a better CEO that has been running that operation. But certainly, I think if you look at the overall long term, I mean, this is not a business that has done exceptionally well in terms of shareholder value creation. And certainly, I wouldn't say that it's a stock that I'd want to own. I mean, it might be cheap now, but I don't know if you take out the price correction, I don't know if it would be as cheap as it is now.
Yeah, I mean, shareholder value creation in the last year, but certainly over the long term, 10 or 15 years, massive shareholder value destruction. If we go back and we pull up a longer term chart of ArcelorMittal South Africa. Rowan, I don't know what you made of the outlook statement because it seems quite negative from management. I mean, they said, okay, I don't want to answer my own question, but what did you think?
Yeah, so I think the issue is you've got these cyclical businesses that are peaking in terms of their cyclical earnings. And so the PEs look very cheap now, historic trailing PEs, but the forward PEs don't look as attractive, as you say, because of the cyclical nature and tightening just economies and diminishing demand. So you really have to take a close look at them. I think also, if the company doesn't generate cash in the form of a dividend, the earnings can be look attractive on paper, but if they're not actually paying that out and sharing that out with investors, are they generating the cash? Are they converting the earnings to cash, which would also diminish the rating and the attractiveness of the share? So I think a lot of that re-rating has played out. The earnings are probably cyclically high, and I think they're just sort of safer or clearer bets elsewhere in this market at the moment.
Yeah. I suppose the one thing that could change the picture dramatically is if you see a really good, intensive, sustained increase in infrastructure investments in South Africa by the South African government. But until evidence of that starts coming through, I think you've got to be quite circumspect. Rowan, just sticking with you, there's a question on Hulamin. At one point, Hulamin was up 21%. I'm not sure if they're talking this year. What's caused this move? What do you think?
Again, talking to our point earlier, Hulamin is a company that was in play at some point. I think it came out with a cautionary late last year, if I recall, but then that cautionary was withdrawn. It's a sort of deep industrial asset with very high NAV and a very low valuation. So it does look like a value play where the replacement cost of the assets is even higher. So, but again, it's the business hasn't been generating cash, sort of hasn't been, I guess, fulfilling its potential, which has been disappointing for investors that were looking for some sort of catalyst. So the key with these value stocks, there has to be some form of catalyst. And I guess maybe some smaller shareholder was getting excited about potential corporate action there, but these shares are quite speculative right now, and could be a value trap unless something happens on the corporate side.
So we're like clearly, I don't look at Hulamin all the time, so I must preface that. And I think maybe the viewer's talking about today because it ended 14% up. So maybe none of us are keeping a close look on Hulamin. So if it was up at 20% at one point and closed 14% higher, have you seen any news in the market about what might be going on there? Because that's quite an aggressive move on no announcement.
Yeah, I didn't analyze the trading volumes to see how strong was the volume that was supporting the price rise. But I'm not sure. I mean, it could be a small buyer that just pushed the price higher. But I think, I mean, just to add to Rowan's point, these are businesses that have high asset values, but those assets are not fully productive in the sense of value creation or shareholder value creation. So certainly they may look cheap from time to time, but you must know that you buy in at a lower price and you're exiting, you're never going to realize the full NAV to some extent because they are not meeting the cost of capital. And I mean, ArcelorMittal is one, Hulamin is another one. They've had to do a number of restructurings to actually support the business and some deals with the breweries and that didn't get them to where they needed to be.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. A good cautionary tale for Hulamin enthusiasts. And then there's questions sticking with you as well. Like you mentioned that in insurance or financial services, there might be some cheap sort of buyout perspectives. So the question is, I'd like to hear the panel's thoughts on RMI and Sirius REIT. So Sirius in the property sector, we'll get to that. But yeah, your thoughts there on either of those two shares?
Yeah, I don't know. They're in the process of distributing value that to shareholders. So I do think that a lot of the upside has been priced in by the market in terms of the value unlock. So I wouldn't be too excited about it, but it's a good operation that they run, and certainly I like management in that business.
Okay, Rowan, your thoughts on RMI? Yes, I mean, has everything been done really that they had to do with the assets that they had within their portfolio? Just
Yeah, so
about.
they have largely distributed the Discovery and the Momentum Metropolitan shares. I mean, really, it is now a pure play on OUTsurance. So it's another entry into a short-term insurer. And really, before this, you could have played RMI for partly that, but it was a corporate holding company, and Santam was the other one. So now you've got to look at it on the merits of the OUTsurance business. I mean, it is maybe a tricky time in the cycle for short-term insurers. The weak rand also pushes up the cost of claims in the motor vehicle book. There were significant floods in KZN. There have been some adverse weather events in Australia as well in the UE business. So you have to look at all of these. But yes, it does look actually very full right now, and I think basically all the value in the short term has been created there.
Okay. Sirius REIT as well, okay. It's a German-focused industrial sort of office parks company. Hasn't had a great year.
I don't look at it that closely, but yeah, I mean, Germany, I think that's enough for me.
Oh, do you mean is that enough for you as in a strong no or a strong yes?
I think they're going to get squeezed quite significantly. There might be opportunities to buy it down the line, but I'm just worried about what's happening in Europe now in terms of energy.
Yeah, I mean, they're having a fantastic summer. I can say that with good authority because I've just been there. But I think the thoughts of what is going to happen in winter is never too far from people's minds with Russian gas supplies. Rowan, do you look at Sirius REIT at all?
Yeah, we have actually owned it in the past. It has been a steady performer and quite a solid performer. It was a rand hedge as well. So it's very well run. But as Vilaki was pointing out, that you're having some risks that you never thought, that sort of the Germany sort of sovereign risk. And little did we know that Germany, about 55% of their energy requirements are actually sourced from Russia. And it's cheap natural gas, and that helps fire actually the German economy. And so this is actually quite a big event risk until we have better clarity on what Russia's objectives are and their potential sort of to reduce or potentially cut off entirely that gas supply. It does make it a difficult investment proposition.
Yeah, I noticed a huge amount of solar paneling going up in Germany, but I wonder how that's going to fare during the winter months. So that's anyone's guess. Maybe just very quickly before I get to your stock picks and sticking with real estate companies. So we're like Liberty 2 Degrees came out with their results today, which seemed really good. Massive improvements, and not just from the depths of COVID, but also from 2019. And yet the market just ignores this one. And I think the discount to net asset value, my colleague Joan Miller seemed to suggest it's around 50%. Why is the market just giving this passing this one by?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I think one of the reasons could be that their strategy, from my perspective, I don't see any clear strategy to grow their business. And they've got some great assets, but I don't know if there is a strategy to actually unlock that discount. I mean, that doesn't seem to be anything that they're doing in that direction. But certainly, it's a big improvement in the results, but I'm not sure if I'd be keen on it.
Yeah, Rowan, would you be keen on it?
If you look at it, it was a tale of two parts. The retail business and assets, they did recover, and largely sort of closer to pre-COVID levels, but the office portfolio is continuing to retrench tenants, and where they do retain those tenants, it looks like the negative reversions are in excess of 20%. So a significant decline in income yield and obviously the valuation. So I think it remains a very challenging space. Again, not very exciting. Slowing economy potentially making things worse. So yeah, again, you've got to think there's got to be, even though it looks really cheap on paper, more exciting opportunities elsewhere.
Okay. All right. Well, tell us about those exciting opportunities between the two of you in the last 1.5 minutes. Rowan, sticking with you, what would you be buying, if anything?
Yeah, we're going for Super Group. It's a very solid industrial logistics concern and quite exposed to car dealerships as well. They recently came out with a trading statement that actually exceeded the market's expectations. So clearly, the rebound from COVID has been very solid. We have seen actually very buoyant trading in the dealerships, the service side of the business, and the used cars. So the volume, sales volumes have come down, but the margins have been very robust. So, and it looks like that is sustainable. And if supply issues are dealt with and volumes go up again, they will continue to generate good income. So it's sort of around a 7p. It looks very reasonable at these levels.
Okay. So, well, lucky, how about you?
They're almost painted. Rowan said 7 PE. My pick is Microsoft. It's about 27 times forward earnings, and I like the business purely because it's got a low. It's actually in a cash position, and also you've got the business that is very resilient through difficult times in the economy. So I certainly think that it is a stock that you can hold and never lose sleep about in this kind of environment.
Stocks that you don't wake up at 3 a.m. worrying about sounds like a good as reason as any to buy a share. Zwelakhe, Rowan, thanks very much for joining us this evening. Nice to chat to you both. Zwelakhe Mguni is from Benguela Global Fund Managers. Rowan Williams is from Nitrogen Fund Managers. And we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Have a good evening.